Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Welcome to an encore broadcast of Connecting Faith here on Faith Radio. The program airs live weekdays at noon Central.
So glad to have you tuned in to Connecting Faith today, and welcome. Here we are just a couple days into August. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls, and I don't know if August is at a exciting time for you, Ted, or is it sort of dog days of summer?
Well, the back-to-school sales have already happened after the 4th of July, so our girls are lamenting that, but it is kind of preparing for that. It'll be here before we know it.
We're going to talk today about something called, one of the phrases we might get into is holy redundancy.
Huh.
And we'll get to the idea of, you know, building your life through small steps that are pushing you in the right direction.
Yeah, I can always use tweaking in that area.
I think so. No question about it. So we're looking forward to our conversation today. By the way, just say welcome to you if you're listening to this conversation on our Faith Radio app. You know, that's available. Hundreds of people are downloading that every month.
It's easy to do. Just search for Faith Radio Network in either iTunes or Google Play, depending on your device. That's Faith Radio Network. It's free. The Faith Radio app. Take us with you wherever you go.
Well, let me set up today's conversation. So I'm looking at our guest today has written a wonderful book we're going to review and talk about, but try and picture this setting since it's a nice day. He writes, a few summers ago, I sat listening to Huey Lewis at an outdoor concert.
Ah, yes.
And kind of picture it. Back in 1985, one of his hit songs was The Power of Love, which anchored the soundtrack to the movie Back to the Future. Before performing the number that evening, Lewis said jokingly, "When I wrote this years ago, I had no idea I would have to sing this song every day for the rest of my stinking life." The crowd laughed, and then the punch of the opening notes blasted from the stage, and Lewis brought it.
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though he'd performed the number hundreds of times before, he refused to phone it in. He belted out the song with energy, and we felt that we had been given a gift.
Oh, yeah. That's so funny. That was my first concert experience ever, too, when this song was popular. It kind of dates myself.
Sure.
Yeah.
You want to hear a little bit of it?
I could sing along, but I won't.
Okay. Let's not. Okay.
Anyway.
Well, with that, let me set up our conversation today, because today we're going to talk with Jeff Mannion about his wonderful book called Dream Big, Think Small, Living an Extraordinary Life One Day at a Time. And he has that story. We'll let him maybe talk a bit about that story in more detail. Let me just introduce Jeff, though. He's been on Faith Radio in the past. In fact, maybe you've heard him on with Susie or with Bill Meyer. But love his writings. He's written several books, including The Land Between, absolutely must reading, and Satisfied. Jeff is senior pastor of Ada Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's served there for over 30 years. And he enjoys digging deeply into the Scripture and passionately teaching the story of the Bible in a clear and relevant way. And we are so honored to have him with us today. Jeff, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Neil, I'm so pleased to be with you again today.
The concert story just reminded us that there's something about doing things every day that, you know, has a bit of maybe drudgery if we let it, or we could actually look at it as something more meaningful.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge. I think one of the reasons that the Huey Lewis number was just so powerful to me is here's a guy that's been getting up there, not simply dozens of times, but hundreds and hundreds of times, and still bringing incredible energy and passion to his work. And, Neil, I've been in the same church for 33 years, and a lot has changed over 33 years, and yet there's this sitting in a chair every week, reading passages of the Scripture, reading a commentary, putting a sermon together. And it was just something in that moment that I said, you know, I never want to reach a point where I'm just phoning it in. You know, every single week I want to bring something fresh, something new, even in my fourth decade of ministry. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge for pastors. It's a challenge for parents. It's a challenge for coaches, nurses, teachers, just to keep showing up again and again and again.
You know, it does seem like culture and, you know, society is certainly focused on the what gets attention are the great acts of virtue. You know, should we be looking for those big moments and instant success?
Yeah, and that's one of the challenges, is I think we're infatuated by the overnight success and the quick fix. And every once in a while, someone will experience a major breakthrough. But, you know, look more closely, Neil, and so often these major breakthroughs are bracketed by these long periods of time of simply chipping away. You know, you get the author that's suddenly discovered, and they're suddenly discovered often after sending in 40 or 50 manuscripts that get rejected. And so it's just really difficult to get away from this slow and steady progress over time, even though we would like a more rapid path.
But just that phrase to help us understand that it is, it's, you know, each word has meaning, doesn't it? Slow and steady progress over time. I mean, that's a pretty loaded sentence.
It's loaded, and it's so not new. I mean, you know, 2,500 years ago when Aesop's fables were collected, one of Aesop's fables from Greece, from classical Greece, was the tortoise and the hare.
Yeah.
You know, that race between the rabbit and the turtle, and the rabbit takes off out of the starting blocks, and the tortoise just kind of moseys along and ends up winning the race when the rabbit stops to take a nap. In the moral of the story, each of those end with a little, you know, a punchline, and it's slow and steady wins the race. And it's not the slow part, you know, because any of us, you know, can mosey along at a snail's pace. It's the steady part. It's just moving forward. And it's not glamorous. It's not flashy, but faithfulness. What we're talking about here is faithfulness. Faithfulness is good. And most often when you look at the heart of any organization, whether it's a hospital, college, a school, or a church, that has really been excellent over an extended period of time, look at its core and you will find a group of devoted people who just kept showing up. Faithfulness, it's a powerful thing.
So hence the book, Dream Big, Think Small, Living an Extraordinary Life One Day at a Time. And in the book, you suggest we maybe consider ant power. Say a little bit more about the premise of the book and ant power.
Yeah, and on the cover of the book, I have these little ants marching across the cover carrying the word small. And it was taken from Proverbs, King Solomon, Proverbs chapter 30, I think it's verse 25. Says, ants have little power, but they store up food during the summer. And it's just this little two-line proverb, this little couplet, where wise King Solomon says, listen, consider the ant. It just goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, carrying seeds into an anthill. And the goal is to set aside enough food so it doesn't starve, the colony doesn't starve during the winter. But they're small. The contrast there is between the smallness of the ant and yet the momentum that's built up over time, not because of the individual trips, but because of the sum of those trips. And therein lies the power, and there also lies the challenge of bringing ourselves again and again, often to mundane tasks.
Well, I think we understand the mundane task part, but how does that tie in with dreaming big? You know, we're just doing our kind of our daily job. We may not be dreaming big like we could be.
Well, by dreaming big, what I'm talking about there is building a healthy family, building a healthy spiritual life, taking the steps within our control to prepare for our future financially, to live a life of outrageous generosity, to care for our soul. That's the thinking big part. The dreaming big part, the thinking small part is just that daily activity you do to get there. So a person that has a big dream of being a spiritual giant, let's say, or just a great spiritual resource and mentor to others. Often what happens there, Neil, is it boils down to sitting with an open Bible for 20 minutes in the morning, day after day after day, reading a chapter of Scripture, taking notes on what you find, opening our heart to God, inviting God into our day, inviting God into our struggles. You know, 15, 20 years down the road, this person is a person that is sought for their wisdom, their discernment, and their advice, and their understanding of Scripture. But you break down what they actually did, and it probably wasn't the result of a three-day retreat or a mountaintop experience, but just this slow, slow and steady discipline over time. And this is so powerful because it means that it's available to all of us. You don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar. You don't have to be a business mogul. You don't have to be an all-American athlete in order to embrace slow, steady, consistent discipline. It just takes a long time to pull off to actually see the results we want to see.
I was thinking as I was reading the book about legacy. There's a lot of talk about legacy these days. Maybe there always has been, but you know, we don't. I don't know if we really always understand and honor what really goes into creating a meaningful, a positive, a significant legacy.
Yeah, and talking about legacy, it's just who do we desire to be remembered as, and what do we desire to be remembered for? And I don't know about you, Neil. There are different ambitions that fly through my heart at different times, and some of those are from God, and some of those are definitely not from God. You know, the desire to be known, the desire to be popular, the desire to make a big splash or something like that. There are other times, though, when I'm thinking clearly, and it's just I desire to be known as someone who's consistent. I desire to be remembered as someone who loved well and served well. I desire to be remembered for my humility. And so when you begin to look at those, suddenly you're into the quiet virtues, the legacy questions that don't make a lot of noise, don't make a huge splash, and are, again, that result of just bringing ourselves to people and bringing ourselves to the Lord again and again and again over a considerable period of time. I think that's how most legacies are born. And I think, unfortunately, many people who desire to live extraordinary lives start looking for something extraordinary to do. And I think that can be a huge mistake because most often, Neil, individuals who end up living greatly don't live greatly because they found something great to do. They live greatly because they found something good to do. But they just repeated it over and over and over and over and over again. It really is living an extraordinary life, but it's lived one day at a time, not through these brilliant breakthroughs.
Talking Dream Big, Think Small with Jeff Mannion today. And in a moment, we'll talk about one of his heroes, maybe yours as well. We'll find out what Fred Rogers has to teach us about dreaming big and thinking small, living an extraordinary life one day at a time. Jeff Mannion, senior pastor of the multi-campus Ada Bible Church in Grand Rapids. He served there for over 30 years and author of several books, including The Land Between and Satisfied. And we are honored to have him with us today on Connecting Faith. Talk more with Jeff Mannion in just a moment.
Morning day for beauty, would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighbor.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
You're planning for an extraordinary life? It can happen a day at a time. Big dreams are achieved through steady progress over time. We're talking Dream Big, Think Small, Living an Extraordinary Life One Day at a Time, written by Jeff Mannion. Jeff's pastor at Ada Bible Church, the multi-site church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He served there for over 30 years, and we'll hear a bit more about his story. He's written a couple of wonderful books, The Land Between and Satisfied, and this new book I thoroughly enjoyed. You'll find it helpful and encouraging and really a great devotional read from Jeff Mannion. Jeff, just mentioned that Fred Rogers, one of your heroes. Say a bit more about why that is.
Yeah, Fred Rogers' program, Fred Rogers Neighborhood, that many of your listeners would remember from their childhood or maybe a program that their children watched. That program, it aired for 33 years. You know, we're talking 1968 up to 2001. And during that stretch of time, Fred Rogers had the same entrance every single program for 33 years. And he starts singing the song, It's a Beautiful Day at the Neighborhood, as he walks in the door, descends the steps. And you know what happens next, right? He takes off his suit jacket, puts on a sweater, zips up the sweater, goes around the corner, sits down, takes off his dress shoes, puts on his tennis shoes as he wraps up the song, Would You Be Mine? Would You Be Mine? Won't You Be My Neighbor? And I think that the reason that Fred Rogers went through that same drill for 33 years was that many of his young listeners came from stable homes where alarm clocks were set, people went off to work, breakfast was made, someone was there to tuck kids into bed at night. And he was also aware that many of his young viewers had absolutely no structure in their lives. They came from homes that were absolutely chaotic. And here these kids were shoved in front of a TV set. And I believe that he was the structure to their day, that he taught them, when you take off your coat, hang it up. When you take off your shoes, when you put your shoes on, tie them up. And there was something about the order and something about the structure that made him dependable. And Fred Rogers believed that the world was not a safe place, that we would experience pain, that we would experience loss, that we would experience grief, that there would be times where we were angry, and that we needed a friend, or in his term, a neighbor, to help us process those things. Many people don't realize that Fred Rogers was an ordained Presbyterian minister, ordained specifically for the purpose of serving the family through the medium of television. And so one of the reasons he's my hero is that he showed up doing the same thing week after week, month after month, year after year, for over 3 decades. He was inducted into the Television Hall of Fame. He had musical guests like Wynton Marsalis and Yo-Yo Ma. And Neil, we're talking, you know, sock puppets here, you know. And most of the songs that he wrote himself that were simple, and we're not talking slick computer graphics. The beauty of Fred Rogers and the reason he was as popular as he was simply because he just kept showing up and serving for a really long period of time.
Well, you've been in that same experience, Jeff. You've been serving Ada Bible Church through ups and downs, and you know, seasons of great growth. But 30 plus years yourself. What are some of the maybe the disciplines, the daily disciplines that you've practiced along the way that's kind of you know, allows for us to sort of see the highlight reels now?
Yeah, and it's. Today, Ada Bible Church is a sizable ministry. It's multi-campus. Neil, I was here for 7 years serving through my 20s before we got up to 100 people consistently. And I know a congregation of 100 people is remarkable in certain parts of the country or the world. In Grand Rapids area, where with a significant population base, where you've got a lot of people looking for a church experience, 100 people after 7 years is decidedly, not particularly overwhelming in its results. And so the most important disciplines of those years were just continuing to show up, continuing to give ourselves, continuing to love people and serve people well, continuing to become the healthiest small church we could be, with the idea that those disciplines were needed if growth ever came. And when growth finally did come, we had set some great, put a great foundation in place for the growth that would occur later. But some of my personal disciplines, we're talking about, you know, ant power, showing up and doing the same thing again and again. One of my disciplines that's small and yet I think very powerful is every day I go through a gratitude exercise where I write down specifically 3 new things that I am grateful for. I think that our lives are bombarded by blessings. And this is just my opportunity to reach out and grab 3 of them and to identify 3 of them as they go zipping by. And so I try to be very specific, you know, I'm grateful for my food, for my house, for my clothes, for my kids, for my grandkids. I try to, you know, wrestling with my 3-year-old grandson Preston last night for the macaroni and cheese we made for dinner, for the walk I was able to take with Chris, for temperatures in February in the 50s, you know, just specific things. And I started doing that discipline years ago, and I didn't start it. Neil, I didn't start it because I'm a grateful person. I started that discipline because I was sensing in my spirit that I was becoming ungrateful with so much of the blessings of life, and I just didn't want to grow old as a self-centered, ungracious person. And so I didn't start the discipline because I'm the gold standard for gratitude. I set that discipline because I desire to become a grateful person. And so 3 items a day over a period of a year, 1,000 items over a period of 10 years, just thanking God for 10,000 different things. And so that's one of my ways that I think small It's simple, it's easy, but it's just redundant and repetitive. And I believe it trains the channels of the heart to become a thankful person.
You know, you also are a runner. I know you've run a few marathons. You know, you share in the book that, you know, there's some important post-race recovery time, and I wonder how we can apply that to our faith journey as well.
Yeah, you know, none of the things they tell you to do after a marathon, none of them I want to do. You need to walk, and I just want to sit. You know, you're supposed to eat protein, eat something, and often after running 26 plus miles, I am not interested in eating a thing. So there's all these healthy things you're supposed to do that greatly reduce your recovery time when you do them. And so I've just learned that there are rhythms in life, Neil, where we need to recover. I think so. There are families that need to recover after Christmas. And just after the gifts and after the in-laws being in town and after the pace, just to say, okay, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to idle back a little bit. One of my recovery periods is Sunday afternoon. I preach generally three times on the weekend, one Saturday night, two Sunday morning. In addition to delivering a sermon three times and leading services, I have more human interaction than should be legally allowed, you know, before, during, and after services. And so I just have to know, okay, get home, eat lunch, take a nap. Okay, don't pick up a remote control and do mindless channel surfing for hours. Get out of the house, take off with Chris, my wife, go for a walk, go for a bike ride during the summer. And it's almost like finishing a marathon where I go, okay, I know what recovery will look like, what slows it and what accelerates it. And I am very, very thoughtful in just simply recovering each weekend to attach myself to those disciplines that speed my emotional recovery.
Yeah, and I think that if pastors maybe particularly can be susceptible to running on empty. And I mean, all of us maybe are finding at times that we lose the vitality. We're trying to persevere, but turns out we don't have anything holding us together.
Yeah, it feels like there's nothing left in the tank. I really believe that those of us whose mission it is to give ourselves away, I'm talking here about coaches, nurses, counselors, parents, pastors, school teachers, if our job is to pour ourselves into other people, Neil, we have got to become experts at filling ourselves back up. It is so hard to pump water out of a dry well. And so if we want to make it our mission to pour ourselves into people, we've also got to make it our mission to refill empty tanks.
Talking today with Jeff Mannion about some strategies to refill the empty tanks, to live an extraordinary life one day at a time. Jeff Mannion is the senior pastor of the multi-campus Ada Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's authored several books, including The Land Between and Satisfied. And he's been a pastor serving at Ada Bible Church for over 30 years and knows what he speaks about that steady progress in the right direction. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about maybe we haven't been reading the Bible in the right way. We've been looking for hero stories, missing important lessons. We'll get a few with Jeff in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Stay tuned.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Connecting Faith.
There is a joy in the journey. There's a light we can love on the way. There is a wonder and wildness to life and freedom for those who obey.
You don't have to be a truck driver to understand the long haul. And we're talking today about the motivation to stick with it, to have longevity, to live an extraordinary life one day at a time. Getting some great insights today from Jeff Mannion, pastor at Ada Bible Church in Grand Rapids. Been pastoring there for over 30 years and author of The Land Between and Satisfied. This is a new book, Dream Big, Think Small, is an encouraging work that will take you. You can read it just a little chapter at a time and make it kind of a six-week devotional, and it will help you in your day-by-day journey to live a life of faithfulness. So, Jeff, I'm wondering, have we been maybe guilty of reading the Bible, looking for hero stories, maybe missing some important lessons?
I think there's this tendency, Neil, to skip the boring parts of the Bible. And the pictures that covered my Sunday school papers as a child, it was like David and Goliath, you know, Daniel in the lion's den, Elijah calling down fire from heaven. And so often we skip over the parts where nothing much is happening. It seems like the biblical characters simply jump from one miraculous moment to the next, and they don't. I mean, in the David and Goliath story, this huge pivotal moment in young David's life, you know what he's doing before the David and Goliath incident, don't you?
Yeah. He's out in the backside of the mountain someplace taking care of sheep.
Now, his brother, when he shows up to the battle where Goliath is, you know, facing off against the Israelites, his brother said, "Have you left, in whose hands have you left those few sheep?" And so here's David, the future King David, and he's obediently, faithfully guarding the family flock of sheep, mundane, normal, non-extraordinary, just very ordinary work. And out of that came this extraordinary moment with Goliath. And I would just, you know, I just encourage readers of the Bible, pay attention to the moments where not a lot of is happening. A lot of times those that paved the way for the extraordinary moments. That is, often God brings the extraordinary moments out of the ordinary moments.
You mentioned Daniel, of course. We, you know, think about the lion's den, but there was that, you know, passage where he talked about he went back to pray just as he had always done.
The Daniel the lion's den story, he's an aged man. This is at the end of his life and ministry, and every day he opens the windows of his house facing the city of Jerusalem. Now, he's a captive in Babylon, and he is facing the city of Jerusalem, I believe praying for its restoration because the city had been destroyed. And he does this day after day after day after day. The Daniel and the lion's den story happens as this pinnacle moment of a lifetime of prayerful faithfulness. And we do the Bible injustice, I believe, if we just focus on the climactic Daniel thrown into the lion's den, not eaten by the lions, and we miss those days of ordinary faithfulness.
Well, let's take a story out of the New Testament, because you talk about a story in the book of Acts about a woman who made clothing. I don't think I'll read that passage the same after that either.
Yeah, her name's Dorcas, or Tabitha, and I call that section of the book the Tabitha Factor. And what happens is it's the early days of the early church. The Jesus movement is just starting, and there is a crisis in the early church. This woman named Tabitha has died, and the apostle Peter is, like, you know, called in from another town. And Tabitha has been laid out in an upstairs room. And, Neil, I think that Peter can hear the mourning before he sees it. And he gets up to this room. It's like a widow's convention. There's all of these widows, and they start walking up to him, showing him the clothing that Tabitha had made for them. Now, it was huge, because in Eastern culture, if your husband died, well, if you had sons maybe that could take care of you, or you went back to your father's home. But if your dad had already passed, and if you didn't have adult sons, and you lost your husband, you could be in big trouble real fast economically. And so Tabitha makes these clothes for these women. And so it's like warmth in the winter, and it is dignity, because instead of wearing something filled with rag or holes and ragged, you're wearing something new. It's hope, because you realize, man, someone's looking out for me. I am not all alone. But Neil, break down what she actually did. And the woman is sewing day after day after day after day. She lives this extraordinary life. She's a hero of the early church. But break down what she, I mean, pass her house on any given day and look in the door, you know, and she's in there working away at whatever loom or whatever they used in the first century. And it was just very ordinary. What was not ordinary, what was extraordinary, was her consistency. It's like there's this plaque that hangs above Tabitha's door that reads, "And then she did it again, and then she did it again, and then she did it again." It's just this massive tribute to humble servanthood. And I just love this lady and her story.
Well, I wonder if that might be an encouragement to maybe some parents today who are doing the unending demands that go along with raising kids.
Oh, man. Ask parents of young children, young grade school age children, ask them, what was Monday like? Well, we got them up, we got them dressed, we got them fed, we got them off. Really, what was Tuesday like? We got them up, we got them fed, we got them dressed, we got them off. Really, describe a Wednesday. It's like Bill Murray's Groundhog Day, you know, where every day looks like the next. And yet, what is at the heart of that is something called stability and something called consistency and something I think children take for granted until they're old enough to come in contact with a home that is chaotic and not stable. And then they realize what a gift that stability was. I just want to encourage your parents out there who are just tired and caught in this sameness. Embrace the mundane. Celebrate the boring. Something great and wonderful can be happening through the daily love that is given to our kids.
You know, while we need to go through the mundane, the daily, the boring, and yet, you know, there are moments when maybe we've heard a message that has changed our life. We've been to a conference. There's an event. You know, you say that we need to look before the presentation or after the conference. So say a bit more about, you know, when we tend to say, well, this conference changed my life.
Yeah, and it has to do with what we call big events. And a big event was a catalyst for my life to change. I lost my mother in an automobile accident when I was in the seventh grade. We moved from the western states to Grand Rapids, Michigan, where my father remarried. And then we moved from the Midwest, Grand Rapids area, to Northern California, my sophomore year of high school. And so, Neil, I had been raised in southeastern Idaho for 12 years of my life. That was home. That was ordinary. One funeral, one wedding, and two cross-country moves later, everything had changed. And it was at a retreat in Northern California after we arrived with a youth group where a man opened the Bible. His name was Derek Matsunaka. He was a pastor in the area. And he delivered a message on Balaam and Balak, and he asked the question, is it time to surrender your heart to God? And that was an evening in the Sierra Nevada mountains on a high school retreat when God recaptured my heart. And so that's what I call a big event, a financial conference that you go to at Arena and hear a nationally known financial guru, or a marriage conference. It really shakes up the way you've been interacting in marriage. And there's a tendency for me to look back and say, okay, that retreat in the Sierra Nevada mountains changed my life, or that financial Arena event changed my life, or the marriage conference changed my life. Most of the time, Neil, you look deeper, and that's not what happened. Most often what happened was it was the discipline that was put in place after we returned home, a series of small decisions after the conference that ended up making the biggest difference. I mean, like a financial conference, you get all, you know, energized and encouraged and motivated at a financial conference, a Dave Ramsey type conference, which I've been to a couple in Grand Rapids, and they're powerful and incredible. But the people who end up actually making positive movement financially are those who actually sit down and go through the budgeting process and often get into a small group where they go through, you know, the financial piece curriculum and then begin one step at a time to begin to control their spending, to begin to pay off debt, to begin to build an emergency fund. And so they end up saying, yeah, that Dave Ramsey conference changed my life. Probably isn't true. That was probably the catalyst that set in motion the daily discipline. So even when there's a big event that's a catalyst, we're still back to ant power. We're still back to showing up day after day, week after week, month after month, and doing the hard, life-changing work.
Well, I think you put it something like this. Reading the Bible tomorrow probably won't help you a lot. And you go, wait a minute, did our pastor say that?
Yeah. People are usually shocked when I say that. Reading the Bible tomorrow probably isn't going to help you. Because doing anything for a day probably isn't going to help that much. Dieting for a day, exercising for a day, you know, people get the point pretty quick. It's what we're willing to do day after day after day after day. Those disciplines that we seize, sometimes small, sometimes boring, sometimes redundant, often life-giving, but often it takes time to see the results.
That's that with the African proverb, if you want to go fast, travel alone. If you want to go far, travel together. And I think we all want to go far. So say a bit about traveling together.
Yeah, just there's a section in my book about life-giving friendships. And I just have to tell you, I would not have survived in ministry for 33 years, and certainly not in the same church for 33 years, without surrounding ourselves with individuals that we could pour ourselves into as they pour themselves into us. I challenge people to identify a handful of close friends instead of celebrating 1,000 Facebook friends who we may or may not know. And rather than flitting back and forth between dozens and dozens and dozens of casual relationships that never go deep, attempt to identify those people in life that at least for a season, because moves take us places and such, but at least for a season, those are people that can count on us and that we can count on to grow together. I don't think we're supposed to grow alone.
Well, Jeff, you've so encouraged us today with your writing and your speaking today, and we just want to recommend the book again, Dream Big, Think Small, Living an Extraordinary Life One Day at a Time. Jeff, we pray that you'll finish well and continue on your faithful journey as well as you've encouraged us. Blessings to you. Thank you for coming on and joining with us today.
And Neil, such a joy to be with you again.
Well, speaking of finishing well, in a moment we'll talk about clarifying your mission in midlife, talking with Peter Greer about his book, 40-40 Vision. That's all ahead on Connecting Faith. It's 48 past the hour. You're listening to Connecting Faith. And we've been talking about neighboring today, about building genuine relationships right outside your door. Name a book from Dave Runyon's co-author of that. Our friend Rick Mattson has written a book. It's been out for a few years, but we always love to connect with Rick, who serves on staff at the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, working in a couple of college universities, McAllister College and St. Olaf College in Minnesota. But he's written a book called Faith is Like Skydiving. And we're not going to necessarily talk skydiving today, I don't think, Rick, but good to see you.
Yeah, thank you, Neil.
We want to just chat about, you know, one of the things that we realize that as believers we need to do more effectively is how to share our faith. And maybe one of the reasons we don't do it as effectively as we could, and we're hoping that over the weeks ahead we can talk more about it with Rick, but maybe we need to talk about the why. Mm-hmm. Why, you know, why do we even, you know, feel this passion, this need?
Yeah. Well, to summarize it, I think love for God and His Word and His mission, and then secondly, love for neighbor. You can do a lot of good theology based on those two points. So love for God. God is a worldwide mission that He's involved in. He's reconciling the world to Himself. If you go all the way back to the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 12, God calls Abraham to be His servant, and it's through Abraham and his people, the people of Israel, that God first manifests Himself to the world, and that eventuates then in the coming of Jesus Christ, and the mission is just continued, God's desire to bless and to reconcile the world to Himself. If it starts with Abraham, it goes down through David and through Jesus and then through the apostles and then the early church and the medieval church and the Reformation, and here we are, Neil. So we're involved in what God intended through Abraham all the way back those thousands of years. And if we say to ourselves, well, if God is a missionary God, if He's missional, then we need to be as well, because we're His people and we need to be involved in what He's doing in the world. So love of God then will love His mission, and love of neighbor will be a compassionate response in sharing the gospel with our neighbors, just as you were talking about here the last few minutes with Dave.
It does need to be motivated by love for God, right? Any other motivations going to come up short?
Yeah, you know, I don't think just obligation to biblical commands is quite enough. I mean, maybe that's not the worst thing in the world. I feel obligated to obey God. That's probably a good thing, too, but it's more robust and more healthy and whole, I would say, to obey God because we love Him. And that's what Jesus commands. He says, if you love me, you'll obey me. And so this is our love for Jesus and His work that we're involved in here.
I guess we've had an experience or two where we tried to enter into a faith conversation and it didn't go well. And so we tend to be kind of skittish about it.
Yeah. I keep getting back to two images that I'd like to share with the listeners. One is a salesperson, and I'm not against sales. I've been in sales in the past, and I know good sales folks, and so that's all good. But when it comes to sharing our faith, I think the image that's more powerful is a detective. What if we think of ourselves as detectives and we're trying to discern what God is doing in the lives of our friends and neighbors and then participate in what he is already doing in their lives? I think that gets us out of the business of bringing the gospel to people. And what I mean by that is, oh, this person doesn't have God in their life. God is in his heaven someplace. I'm down here. I'm his representative. And I'm going to give the sales pitch to this person in such a great way that they're going to come to faith. I think we can slip into that sort of thinking way too easily. Wouldn't it be more biblical, really, to say that God is already working in the lives of our friends and neighbors? Our job is to be what Rick Richardson in his books, he's a Wheaton evangelism teacher, what he calls being a detective and trying to understand what God is doing ahead of us. And then we walk into the conversation and play our part.
And that part doesn't have to be all the way from A to Z, right? It's maybe just taking or inviting or pushing the next step.
Right. Your prior guest was talking about taking that next critical step. I totally agree with that. And it's the accumulation, I think, of little steps. It's the ongoing process. It's being faithful in prayer, in trusting the Holy Spirit, and putting ourselves out there to be used by God, I think is where we'll see results in witness.
Well, say a bit about, faith is like skydiving. Is it important to have, we've been talking a little bit about, metaphoric neighboring, but mm-hmm. are metaphors helpful when we're trying to engage in faith conversations?
I really think they are, because metaphors are much more memorable than abstract thoughts or abstract arguments. Believe me, I love a good argument, but the more I'm around college students in my job, the more I realize that if I can give some concrete stories and illustrations and analogies, those are much more memorable than if I'm just throwing arguments out there. So the whole idea then behind the book, Faith is Like Skydiving, is, and that's the most obvious metaphor in the book. If someone asks me, well, what do you mean by faith? What is faith? Is it just blind opinion? Are you making things happen in the external world by willing it in your mind and that's your faith? No, not at all. Faith is Like Skydiving suggests the idea that we don't have this blind leap of faith into the air. Like if I went skydiving, I would check out the gear and the company and the pilot and the plane and the parachute, and I'd want to know what I'm getting into. However, there's still that moment, that critical moment when the plane door opens and you go and you take a risk. So what I would call that is an informed faith. It's an informed jump. It's not a blind leap. It's not a blind jump. You've done the research. You've come to the conclusion that this is true. I should commit my life to it. And when you're in the plane, you've come to the conclusion that I'm going to be safe. This parachute is going to save me. And I'm going to take the risk to jump out of the plane right now. So there's always an element of risk. That's not what I'd call proof. Proof is when you get to the ground.
Yes. Do you have opportunity not only to share faith and engage in dialogue with those that are interested in exploring, but also training those that are trying to be more effective? Is there maybe one thing that tends to, we stumble on maybe more than others?
Let's see, one thing that we stumble on, I think fear just slows us down so much. And I think if we get this notion that the Holy Spirit is going ahead of us, it'll reduce the fear factor a bit because it takes the pressure off me. I don't have to be the world's greatest evangelist to be a person who shares their faith regularly. And even though I'm trained, I still feel insecure at times around the idea of witness. Oh, am I imposing on this person? Or are they going to reject me? But if we think God has gone before us, and if we think the Christian life is defined by taking these risks, that's what being a Christian is, in the lives of our friends, then I think we'll get out there and we'll do it. And I think evangelism is momentum, too. Once you do it two or three times, the fourth is easier. And once you do it 20 times, the 21st is a lot easier.
Yeah.
So build ourselves up to that point by taking those smallest steps that your prior guest, I really appreciated what he was saying, Dave Runyon, what he was talking about, those incremental steps.
We're going to talk more in the weeks ahead about ways that we can take some of those incremental steps with Rick Mattson. Rick does outreach, serves on staff at the University Christian Fellowship, serving on the McAllister College and St. Olaf College campus, Minnesota, and has written a book called Faith is Like Skydiving. And we're going to hear more about that in the moments in the days ahead. But Rick, thank you for your encouragement with us today, because we want to grow in this area. I mean, this is, as you said, you know, God is a missional God. We want to be joining him in what he's already doing.
Yes, so. Yes. Okay, talk to you soon.
Well, I always appreciate you listening and joining in here in the conversation on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of our conversation with Rick Mattson these past few minutes, or our earlier discussion with Dave Runyon about the art of neighboring, you can always find those interviews posted on our website. You can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. It's myfaithradio.com. And Ted, I think, you know, we can all do a little work about neighboring, building genuine relationships. A good reminder today.
Help is good, and yeah. It was a great conversation. Thanks for that.
By the way, we still got a few days left on our Choose Joy devotional giveaway.
Yeah, wonderful resource. 30 devotions from Kay Warren that she's put together, and we're giving away two copies each week, yeah. Right? So still an opportunity for you.
So you can sign up for that online at myfaithradio.com. Again, giving away a couple of copies of Kay Warren's Choose Joy devotional book each week, and that'll run here through the end of the month. So check it out. Sign up today. Choose Joy devotional at myfaithradio.com, and check out the Connecting Faith show page when you're there as well. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.